Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. Getting through the physical and emotional hurdles of cancer is hard enough, but then there's the financial burden. The Bob Perks Cancer Assistance Fund was established in 2006 to help local cancer patients struggling to pay their bills during their treatment. The fund has distributed more than $1 million and lightened the load for more than 1,000 local families battling cancer in Blair, Center, Clearfield, and Huntingdon counties. To find out more, we've asked Doreen Perks to join us. She started the fund in honor of her late husband. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Before we find out about the fund, I wanted to find out about Bob Perks.
Well, Bob Perks and I met actually on a blind date. Unfortunately, he knew it was a blind date and I did not. Which might have been for the best. Long story short, we hit it off, not immediately, but almost immediately. And it just went from there. We got married in 2000. And in 2001, our first son, Garrett, was born. And in 2002, Bob was diagnosed with melanoma.
Wow.
Yeah, it was kind of a whirlwind.
And we're talking about a young, athletic, college baseball player.
Right. It's crazy.
And melanoma was not on your radar.
Well, I mean, that's a tough one to say. It was not a family history. However, Bob did have a lot of moles, and he did go to the dermatologist very regularly, every 6 months. But for some reason, I guess when there's a lot, you can't take everything off. And one day I just looked at him, and it was on his back, and I said, I don't like the looks of that. And he actually went into the dermatologist the next morning. They were very good about that with him because he was a little high risk. And they took it off, and I will not forget when the report came back, and he was totally devastated.
And the report that came back, it wasn't one of the more common skin cancers. And, of course, skin cancer is the most common cancer. This was melanoma.
Right, and it's totally different.
It strikes less than 2% of cancer patients, but it's the most deadly.
Yeah, there's really not a lot of terrific treatments out there. In fact, at least when Bob went through it, they didn't even use traditional chemos because it wasn't effective. So they had him on some crazy treatments. The first one was interferon, and that actually, he took it for a year. And the first month was horrendous. He had extremely high doses infused by IV, and he would come home and be so sick. It was like he had the most horrible flu you've ever seen. He would have fevers, 103, sometimes 104. And by the next morning, he would feel good enough to get up and go to work. So that went on for about a month, and then they lowered the dose. So he had to give himself injections 3 days a week, and that lasted for a year. And afterwards, they said, you're great, and they sent him on his way.
And you had another baby, and, thinking this is behind you.
And I have to admit, he was not real sure about that. And I said to him, I said, I am not going to live the rest of my life looking over my shoulder in fear of cancer coming back. We are going to move on. I mean, clearly that was a decision we had to make together. But, you know, I really did not want to live my life worried that this was coming back.
And this melanoma struck your family when Bob was in his late 30s.
Yeah.
The average age for melanoma is in our 60s.
I don't know the statistic on that. All I know is a lot of people a lot younger are being diagnosed with melanoma.
Well, it's common among young people as well, but it's most common when we're in our 60s.
Yeah, and maybe that's because we've had more years in the sun. I don't know. I really don't think in Bob's case this was completely sun-related. It was on his back. He wasn't the kid that went to the pool every day in the summer. He was the kid that played baseball, clearly, with a shirt on. So I'm not real sure Bob's was sun-related or maybe the sun added to it. I don't know. I just don't think that was the key factor in his.
What's interesting about your story is Bob had a great job with really terrific health insurance benefits. And for the most part, his treatment was covered. And he was also involved in a number of experimental treatments that are also covered. And yet you and your family, and especially Bob, it seems, noticed during his treatment that other people were really in terrible financial binds because of their disease, because of cancer.
Well, yeah, it's interesting when, you know, we did a lot of his treatment out of Pittsburgh because there was a melanoma specialty center. And that worked out well for us because I'm from Pittsburgh. I mean, I'd just been living there not that long before. I had friends. I had relatives. We always had a place to stay if we needed it. So that was great for us. But, you know, you go back over and over, and you're going to cancer clinics. So you clearly, everybody there has cancer. And it's really difficult to watch. You see children coming in there with bandanas on their heads because they've lost their hair. And it's heartbreaking. And, you know, honestly, we had a situation once where Bob was headed to Pittsburgh. We were leaving that morning. He was scheduled for a procedure that day, somewhere between a procedure and a surgery. It was very cutting edge. And the bottom line was I found out that morning that the insurance wasn't going to cover it. Because it was so cutting edge, it wasn't covered, but also because it was cutting edge, it was extremely expensive. And I think I found out the bill was going to be about $50,000. And I spent the morning on the phone, and it really wasn't resolved. And I said, we're going anyway. And as it turned out, we spoke with the doctor, and he was able to do the procedure a little less cutting edge, should I say, to make it covered, which is absolutely ridiculous to me, but that's a whole nother subject we don't need to go into. But we would have been stuck with a bill for $50,000.
And the reality is that most people in this situation, they're worried about saving their loved one's life. They're
exactly.
Not thinking about the bills that are going to pile up afterwards.
I just said, we're going. I don't care. If we need this, we need this. Let's go.
So tell me how, because it was just shortly after losing Bob in 2005, you're sitting at your kitchen table and you said, we need to create a fund to help people get through the financial burden part of dealing with cancer.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I'm going to credit Bob and the folks he worked with at Coaches vs. Cancer or CVC, because I really think the whole idea behind this came from their efforts.
So Bob, even before he had cancer, was one of the founding members of the State College chapter of Coaches vs. Cancer, which was started by the basketball
That's right.
field.
Right. And that's how it's run in most areas of the country. So CVC is an affiliate of the American Cancer Society. So all their money goes back to the American Cancer Society, which is a wonderful organization. And they do so much good. And there's so many things that they do. And their funding is so much greater than something we have. But I think the folks at CVC also wanted to know that not only were they doing all these wonderful things, but what about when their neighbor's diagnosed? And, you know, they see them struggling and they're doing all this work and they can't reach out and touch them. And so they always wanted to do something like this. This was just the impetus that behind me said. And in addition, somebody gave a very nice donation to the Center Foundation and wanted it to be in Bob's name. And that was
the genesis, really.
It really was. It was like the perfect storm. And I do believe that things happen for a reason. And I think the perfect storm happened and we just said, this is what we have to do with all of this, and we need to do it now.
Did it help you get through the grief of losing Bob? Because now there's a fund named after him, and he lives on in the lives that you touch through the fund.
That's an incredible understatement. In the beginning, I walked in a fog for 6 months. I functioned. I had two little kids. You know,
but an 11-month-old.
Yeah. You have to get up and get him out of the crib and change his diaper and get both of them breakfast. And, you know, you can't just sit in bed. You have to get up and do. So in the beginning, it's hard to figure out how you process everything and to be very sad and then get this thank you letter that says, I don't know how we would have eaten without your help last month, or you made
things that basic.
Basic, so basic. We didn't have heat in our house. Thank you. I don't know how to say thank you. That is so uplifting in a time when you need it so badly. And I've said this before, and I'm not even embarrassed to say it. I think in some ways, in the beginning, this was as much for me as it was for all the folks we helped. But that continues as time goes on. And also, like you say, what a legacy for Bob, for his children who never really are going to remember him, to know that his name and everything about him is carried on through this fund. It is. It's a
Pretty
wonderful,
neat.
Uplifting tribute to a wonderful man.
So the early money actually came from Coaches Versus Cancer. It went into this fund and allowed someone to distribute money to people who need basic things like a mortgage payment met or an electric bill paid or grocery bills purchased.
We couldn't have functioned in the beginning without CVC. We really are like sister organizations. And to this day, I mean, we always keep an active CVC member on our board of directors. There's a lot of communication. We work well together. And the American Cancer Society. I know those folks well, and we sit down and talk on a regular basis. Wonderful relationship there. And yes, without them in the beginning, we didn't know how to fundraise. I was in medical sales my life. I didn't know how to run a charity. I didn't know how to fundraise. So in the beginning, before we had, and even at that, the first fundraiser we had, we started early 2006. February, I think we actually got a tax ID number. And then, you know, it was that fall before we had our first fundraiser. So the only money we had came from our funding from CVC that year.
So February of 2006, fast forward to 2015, you've raised over $1 million.
We've allocated over $1 million.
Okay, I should say allocated, distributed.
Right.
Over $1 million to more than 1,000 local cancer patients in Blair Center, Clearfield, and Huntington counties. I'm wondering how these cancer patients find you in the first place.
I love that you asked that question, because one of the things that, you know, and again, we started this kind of experimenting and guessing and, you know, getting a lot of advice from a lot of people. And we put together the most amazing program that is working wonderfully to this day. We have what we call our referral sources out there. They're usually a patient navigator, people that work with cancer patients. So
in the hospital.
In the hospitals. Some might come from a doctor's office if it's an oncology office, but typically they're hospital-based and they see every cancer patient. And as those patients come through, they assess what are their other needs. You know, where somebody might need a nutritionist because they've lost too much weight, the next person might be canceling appointments because they can't afford the gas to get there. That's when they start asking questions. It appears that you're really struggling financially. I have a suggestion for you, and they tell them about the Bob Perks Fund. So every patient that comes to us has to be referred, because if you just sent me an application, I can't call your doctor and say, hey,
and
does verify. Patty really have cancer?
And sadly, there are people who fake it for this exact reason.
Exactly. We just heard that story. And that's what I love about the way this is set up. You can't fake it. Our referrals are coming from someone clinically related to your diagnosis, and they're saying to us, A, this patient truly has cancer, and B, I've seen it. They are struggling financially.
And here's the astounding statistic. According to a Harvard University study, 62% of Americans who file for personal bankruptcy do it because of medical debt. It's because they got sick that they're overdue on their bills. And a lot of the people who've come to you through these patient negotiators have come to you when their bills are overdue.
That's right. And I even wonder, of those patients that you were just talking about, I'm sure that there are some that, you know, didn't have health insurance and had to have an emergency appendectomy. But I wonder what percentage of them are cancer patients. I bet it's a lot.
A lot. And the other myth is that if you have good health insurance, you won't find yourself in that position. And that's so untrue for so many people, especially those who are unemployed. Suddenly, the breadwinner has cancer and can't go to work.
Right.
You've talked with a lot of people. You've met them. You've discussed their cases. You've decided what you're going to allocate funds for. What stories stick out in your head?
You know what? Honestly, I'm completely withdrawn myself from looking at applications. And I'm so glad, because there are stories that I cannot forget. I had a mother who was applying for her daughter because she was not old enough. The daughter had leukemia from the time she was 2 years old. The parents were divorced, so clearly they both had to be working. But how does the mom go to work when the daughter has had leukemia? The daughter was 18 years old. How does mom go to work? And even if she can go to work, I mean, nobody gives you that much time off. I mean, for 18 years, you can't just keep saying, I can't come to work again. So the mom hadn't worked. When they came to us, their bills were so overdue. just her water bill was over $800.
Wow. There's a limit to, though, what you'll cover.
Right.
Explain how it works. How does the process work? Someone comes to you with a pile of bills and says
sort of. When they work with the patient navigators and the navigator refers them to us, they fill out our application, which is we have attempted to make it as simple and basic as possible because they have enough on their plate. They don't need a 10-page complicated form. So they fill out our very simple form with basic information, demographics, and then what is your cancer and what is your problem and why are you needing funding. Basically covers it. Then they attach copies of the bills they want paid. The other beauty of the navigators is they very clearly know what we accept by this point and what we don't. So if that patient says, I want to put my credit card bill on there, they're going to say to them, I would recommend you don't do that. We don't cover credit card bills for obvious reasons. We don't know what you bought. You know, we would be happy to cover your electric bill, your phone bill.
Your mortgage.
Mortgages are a little bit of an exception for us. That's a long story. But rent, if you need groceries, we'll send gift cards so you can go to the grocery store.
Gas cards.
And I have to put a little plug in, if you don't mind, for Sheetz. From the day we started, Sheetz gives us the first $15,000 in gas cards for free every year. Every year since the year we started this. That's amazing.
My guess is that somewhere in the Sheetz family, they've been touched by cancer, because I look at the Coaches versus Cancer, mm-hmm. and so many of the early founders of the State College Coaches versus Cancer have suffered cancer themselves.
It's crazy. I mean, it almost started to freak people out a little bit for a while. And all of these people entered CVC not ever thinking that it was going to happen to them. But it certainly touched an awful lot of those original CVC members.
If you are just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. Medical bills are the number one cause of personal bankruptcy, and having health insurance doesn't shield consumers against financial hardship. Our guest is Doreen Perks, founder of the Bob Perks Cancer Assistance Fund, which she started in honor of her late husband. The fund helps Central Pennsylvania families pay their bills when someone in the household is stricken with cancer. A lot of the people who've come to you have come to you more than once.
Sure.
What are the guidelines or the rules?
That's a good question. Once we receive the application, because it's been basically pre-screened, we do have an allocations committee, and they vote individually on every single application that we receive. And even if they say no to something, they might just say no to that credit card bill, but ask them to reapply for other bills. So it's very rare that we have to say no to someone, but it happens. So once they're approved by the allocations committee, then we actually pay the bills directly. We do not send them cash. We pay the bills directly.
And you do it in 24 or 48 hours.
You know, we like to say, to be safe, your bills will be sent out in 2 weeks. I really don't think it takes that long. And that again, is part of our goal. We know how much they have on their plate. We don't want to make this another
burden.
This
really lifts a burden, right?
Yeah.
Do you ever negotiate with debtors?
Sure. In fact, I'll tell you a really warm story. The individual that I was talking about before, I had spoken with her, and you know, you could see the devastation. The debts were so bad. And about an hour before I had spoken with her, someone had called me, knowing that what we were doing, it was around Christmas time, and she said, we're looking to do something extra around the holidays for a family that's really in need. And she explained what she wanted to do. And so I hung up the phone, and I kind of racked my brain. And, it was less than an hour later that this mother of this sick child with leukemia called me. And we were talking, and I was like, ding, ding, ding. And this was a completely, she wanted to be anonymous, or they wanted to be anonymous. They not only picked up that $800 water bill, but a couple of her other significant bills as just an extra. It wasn't through the Bob Perks Fund. All I did was coordinate. And she picked up quite a bit of
A lot of people have said, you know, every community needs a Bob Herks type fund, and yet they don't exist in most communities.
No, I mean, you know, I've since we started doing this, I've seen information and bits and pieces of different organizations in other states and other parts of the country, but they're rare. They're very rare. And I don't know how they operate. I don't know. You know, we made up everything here. I love the way we made it up. And in retrospect, I honestly can't find anything that we should have done differently. It's a great process. We have limitations. So they're allowed to apply every 3 months, so once a quarter. They can get up to a maximum of $750. Unfortunately, that used to be $1,000. But we had a really tough year last year. And we can't have two of those. So, but typically that'll handle a pretty good chunk. And, you know, it's just, it's a great process. We had someone come on board that's known our organization from the beginning, and she just started becoming involved and looked at me one day and said, I am so impressed. It's such a well-oiled machine. And I love to hear that because I believe it is.
A well-oiled machine, and it's done through the efforts of volunteers with only two, and just recently, two part-time paid staff.
That's right. That's right. Norma Keller is our executive director, and she has 37 years experience heading up the Youth Service Bureau. And Jen Finkel is our assistant director, and she actually, she's been with us longer than Norma, and she... I couldn't have hired a better person in her spot. She's amazing. So, and Norma is too. We have a wonderful, and everyone else is volunteer.
Including you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, here's the thing. I'm so happy that I can do this, but when I start to take a salary, that's all those people that aren't going to be funded.
If you took a salary, you mean?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. Which
I don't.
I don't have any desire to do that. Mm-hmm. That's a whole bunch of people that we're not going to be able to help. And fortunately, you know, Bob and I were very practical, and we're in a good situation that this is how I'm giving back.
You're celebrating your milestone of raising and distributing $1 million on Friday, September 18th, with a Thanks a Million celebration that will be held at Le Papillon Restaurant in Tauftrees. First of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
But what more do you want to do? What's the fund's long-term goal?
Well, it's a funny question because I don't know that we really thought we'd be here now. I mean, we just started it wanting to do something good. I will tell you what we're trying to do right now is possibly expand to a new county. I'm going to kind of keep that under wraps because I don't know if it's going to happen and I don't want people.
How did you arrive at the Center Blair?
Okay. Oh, no.
So the Huntington-Claire...
Interestingly enough, when we started, you know, we thought we could just save the world. And so we had Center in every contiguous county. And once people started hearing what we were doing, we very quickly realized there's no way we can fund that. There's way too much need. So that's when we cut back. And we cut back based on the demand. So that's where we were getting the most demand. The new county that we're hoping to add, same thing. It's just we're seeing there's so much demand there. So we're experimenting as to how we can maybe pilot this.
We'll and see. So you have lots of corporate sponsors, individual sponsors, lots of fundraising that goes on mm-hmm. throughout the year. Is there something that is the most important to your fundraising efforts?
Well, that's an interesting question because I think we're a little bit in a transition phase where that goes. Because initially, it was pretty much fundraising. Lots of great fun events. We do have wonderful fun events. I mean, if anybody ever wants to come join us, they're great. They're a lot of fun. However, as we've grown, you know, this is a small community. You can only ask people to come out and support you so many times. And so we are at a crossroads where we realize that our growth is going to be so dependent on corporate sponsorships. And if we can't grow that side of it, I don't know how we continue to grow the organization because, you know, you can only plan so many events a year.
And, you know, the sad thing is Well, there have been some successes with cancer. Cancer is something that's affecting more and more of us. Melanoma, for example, which is what took your husband, Bob, it's only been increasing. It's the only cancer that's been on the increase for the last 30 years.
I know. And it feels to me, and I realize that it's in my world more, but it just feels like every time I turn around, someone else is being diagnosed with cancer, and I don't get it. And, you know, my kids, melanoma is a hereditary cancer. It's a constant, constant worry. Garrett just had them all taken off, and they're always a little bit abnormal. And I go into a little panic mode, you know. It's very difficult. That is my biggest worry. I just can't imagine children ever going through some of the stuff that I saw Bob go through.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us.
And thank you for having me.
That was Doreen Perks, founder of the Bob Perks Cancer Assistance Fund. To apply for assistance, donate to the fund, or for information on the upcoming Thanks a Million celebration, check the links on our website, wpsu.org/take note. 2 years ago, Penn State announced plans to outsource childcare at its Bennett Family Center. Parents protested. That led Penn State to launch a task force on childcare issues. Now, based on task force recommendations, the university has made a turnaround, bringing management of a different, previously outsourced childcare center in-house. WPSU's Emily Reddy discussed the about-face with Holly Benjamin. Benjamin is the new director of early childcare programs and services at Penn State. The position itself was created on recommendation of the childcare task force.
So why was that decision ultimately made to bring the child care centers in-house when the idea before had been to have someone else manage them?
Our research kind of indicated that this was the best option for these two centers. You know, we have campuses throughout the Commonwealth that have child care centers that are outsourced, and for most of those, it seems to be working well. And I think that we really just looked at these two particular centers and what the needs were there and how we could be successful. So the turnover rate was so high that we really wanted to find ways to retain staff in an outsourced model, which we came up with a number of strategies to do that. But in the end, it was a financial implication that really led us and moved us to that direction of an in-house management model.
It seems like, I mean, outsourcing is kind of more the trend. Is that changing, or was this unique to these particular centers?
I think the business of childcare is different than some of these other outsourced areas and campuses across the country. Really, childcare started out as a lab school where students needed places to observe children that were typically developing. As more women went back to work, colleges realized we need places for these children to be all day. That's when I think that the financial pieces of running them became substantial for colleges all over the country, and it just became very expensive to do childcare. And so a lot of times, childcare centers are moving into other units on their campuses, like human resources, budget offices, to support those centers. And some of them have outsourced as well, either because they don't have student programs that where there's education going on and it's more about the child care, and then others have just have grown and added more in-house child care centers too. So there's a huge need.
That was Holly Benjamin, the new director of early child care programs and services at Penn State, talking with WPSU's Emily Reddy. You'll find the full version of this interview on our website, wpsu.org/take note. I'm Patty Satalia, WPSU.